Okay, if you would, turning your Bibles to Daniel, chapter 11 is where we're going to be this morning. as we continue our survey of Daniel in the midst of our study of the minor prophets. Again, the time frame of the writing of chapter 11 of Daniel is about 536 B.C., and Daniel would be at about the age of 85, 84, in that range of his life at this time. So this is the timing of the 11th chapter is the third year of Cyrus. Cyrus is the one that issued the decree for them to go back and to rebuild the temple and to go back into to end the captivity. And so they're progressing toward that at this time. So it's the end of the 70-year captivity into Babylon. And it's been brought about by the Persian king Cyrus, and this is in his third year of his reign. Before we get into chapter 11, though, to set kind of the context, and I want to reemphasize the importance of interpreting the Bible, understanding the context that you're dealing with. In chapter 11, there's a lot of things in here that can be misconstrued and misapplied if you don't understand the context of what's going on in chapter 11. So, to go back and realize that Daniel is giving, he's been given visions and in dreams and in prophetic utterances by the angels and by different ones. And this is all leading up to a understanding of God's program for his nation and his people, Israel. So to understand some of the details of chapter 11, we need to go back and just look real quickly at chapter 7, because the importance of understanding the role of the Antichrist is huge in the understanding of the book of Daniel, because it is the Antichrist during his reign is when Christ is going to come back and set up the kingdom. And that's what Daniel is focusing toward, is the events that lead up to the setting up of the kingdom age. And the Antichrist is the king that's present on earth at the time of the second coming of Christ, or at the time of the Messianic kingdom. So in Daniel chapter 7, Daniel had a vision, you remember, of these four beasts. The four beasts represented four Gentile kingdoms that would come upon the earth that would dominate Israel and dominate Jerusalem. And the first of these four kingdoms was Nebuchadnezzar and the Babylonian Empire. And that's the beginning of the captivity when Nebuchadnezzar came in and took them captive, and then in 605 BC is when he started taking captivity. It was 586 BC when he destroyed Jerusalem, destroyed the temple, and killed Zedekiah, the last king of Israel, or last king of Judah. And from the point of Zedekiah's death in 586 B.C. until the coming of the Messiah, Israel will not have an established king in the lineage of David. Now, they had puppet kings that were placed in by the other kings that would put, like King Herod, or he was a puppet king of Rome that was placed over the Jews, but he's not a king in the lineage of King David. And you won't have another king of Israel in the lineage of King David until the Messiah. So Zedekiah was the last one that ruled over Judah, the house of David. So these four beasts in Daniel chapter 7 represent these four Gentile kingdoms, basically the Babylonian Empire, the Medes and the Persian Empire, the Grecian Empire that began with Alexander the Great, and then extended what we're going to be dealing with this morning in chapter 11. And then you have the Roman Empire and the final stages of that Roman Empire, the final stage of that last Gentile power, which will be the Antichrist stage before the coming of the Messiah, the King for Israel. So these four beasts represent these four kingdoms, these four kingdoms. Now the last kingdom is that terrible beast that didn't have a descriptive name. It was a terrible beast. And then in Daniel chapter 7, what's different about Daniel 7 of Daniel's vision and Daniel 2 with Nebuchadnezzar's dream is there's further information about this last king known as the Antichrist. And so in Daniel chapter 7, he talks about this in Verse 23 of Daniel 7, it says, "The fourth beast will be a fourth kingdom on the earth, which will be different from all the other kingdoms, and it will devour the whole earth and tread it down and crush it. As for the 10 horns, out of this kingdom 10 kings will arise, and another will arise after them, and he will be different from the previous ones and will subdue 3 kings. So this last king that's going to rise up after there's a four king situation in the Roman Empire. He's going to rise up during the time of the 10 kings, and he's going to subdue three of those kings or kill three of those kings, and then the other seven are going to submit to him. It says in verse 25, he will speak out against the Most High and wear down the saints of the Highest One. He will intend to make alterations in times and in law, and they will be given to his hands for a time, times, and a half a time. But the court will sit for judgment. His dominion will be taken away, annihilated, and destroyed forever. Then the sovereignty, the dominion, and the greatness of all the kingdoms under the whole heaven will be given to the people of the saints of the Highest One, and his kingdom, the Lord's kingdom, will be an everlasting kingdom. So it's at the time of this king, which is the last king of the Romans, that the Messiah will come. Now, remember that. This is the fourth kingdom, and it's the end of the fourth kingdom that this king will arise, and it was during his, at the end of his kingdom is when the Messiah will come back. All right, now that's established. Daniel's already established this in Daniel chapter 7. So you get to Daniel chapter 9, and he adds to that by talking about this prince who's to come, which is the same as the Antichrist, the king. So in Daniel chapter 9, between verses 24 and 27, you have the 70 weeks of Daniel given to us. And the 70 weeks of Daniel is that time period of 490 years in which God is going to bring about all the fulfillment of the promises and prophecies to Israel. And the last of that 493-year period, the last 7 years of that, is the last week. And it says in verse 26 that after the 62 weeks, the Messiah will be cut off and have nothing, and the people of the prince who is to come will destroy the city and the sanctuary, and its end will come with a flood, even to the end. There will be war, desolations are determined. And he, the Antichrist, the king that's coming, will make a firm covenant with the many for 1 week, but in the middle of the week he will put a stop to sacrifice and grain offerings, and on the wing of abominations will come one who makes desolate, even till the complete destruction, one that is decreed, is poured out on the one who makes desolate. Now again, in chapter 9 here, Daniel is again given a new additional information about this fourth kingdom and the last king of the fourth kingdom. And this last king of the fourth kingdom, after the time of the Messiah and after the time of the destruction of Jerusalem in 70 AD, so we know that this event of the last king is coming after the Messiah is cut off, after the crucifixion of the Messiah, and after Rome has destroyed Israel and Jerusalem in 70 AD. So this king, whoever he is, comes later. He is a Roman. He comes after the Messiah, and he comes after the destruction of Jerusalem. So that's important to understand the context of the Antichrist that has been given, the information about the Antichrist that's been given here in Daniel chapter 9. That's important. We lay in a foundation. The context that we're going to be looking in Daniel chapter 11 will give you clarity about what it is talking about and what it's not talking about, because the Antichrist is the last king of the Romans, which is the fourth kingdom. And this time period for the Antichrist, the last 3.5 years of his domination of the earth, will come just prior to the kingdom, the messianic kingdom of the Lord Jesus Christ. Everybody clear on that? Okay? So we know what it says here is that he will put a stop to the sacrifice in the middle of the week. So in the last 7 years, at the midpoint of the last 7 years, and we know the 7 years is talking about the tribulation time that Revelation talks about between chapter 6 and chapter 19 of Revelation. It talks about 120 days and another 120 days, 3.5 years, 42 months. The last 42 months of that time period is this time period of the Antichrist domination and rule. And it comes right after he does what is called the abomination of desolation in the temple. Now, this abomination of desolation occurs 3.5 years before the second coming of Christ. This abomination of desolation occurs during the reign of the Antichrist. That's important. Because in chapter 11, when we're going to be looking at this morning, it talks about an abomination of desolation, but it's not the same one. It's a different one because it's talking about the time of the third kingdom, which is the Grecian Empire, and another king that rises up during the third kingdom. So you have to be careful when you read things in the scripture that it all fits the narrative from beginning to end. You've got to compare scripture. It's important. Okay, another reason that you understand that is you go to Matthew chapter 24, and Jesus is talking to his disciples, and he's giving them information about the end times before the setting up the kingdom. Because the disciples had asked him when the temple was going to be destroyed, and then when was he going to set up the kingdom. And in Matthew 24, as Jesus is going through that session, he gets down to verse 15, and he says, "Therefore, when you see the abomination of desolation, which was spoken of through Daniel the prophet, standing in the holy place, let the reader understand." So here Jesus is talking about abomination of desolation that Daniel spoke about. Now, Daniel speaks about two abomination desolations, one in chapter 9 and one in chapter 11. The one in chapter 9 deals with the one that Jesus is referring to because it is still yet future at the time that Jesus is giving this understanding to his disciples. The abomination desolation he's talking about is the one that is yet future in Jesus' day. Okay? So just keep those things in mind as we go to chapter 11 of Daniel. Now, Daniel chapter 11 comes right, it's an extension of chapter 10. In chapter 10, Daniel had this vision of the glorified Christ. We saw that in Daniel chapter 10. He was on the 24th day in verse 4. He was by the bank of the river Tigris, and he lifted up and he saw a vision of the glorified Christ. And he fell down as a dead man. Similar to what John did in Revelation, when he saw a vision of the glorified Christ, he fell down as a dead man. So in both cases, they saw the vision of the glorified Christ in all of his glory, and they both fell down as dead men. And it was such a tremendous vision that Daniel had no strength. And so Gabriel came to him, and Gabriel comforted him and talked to him and gave him strength and gave him the understanding of the vision that he received, the last vision, concerning the ending of all of the concepts that has been given to Daniel in the book of Daniel. And that's what we're having to deal with in Daniel's chapter 11 and 12, is the final vision and the understanding of that vision. So you get to chapter 11, and Gabriel in verse 1 talks about the spiritual warfare that goes on in the angelic realm or the angelic world. In Daniel chapter 1, he says, "In the first year of Darius the Mede, I arose to be an encouragement and a protection for him." This is Gabriel speaking. Gabriel is speaking to Daniel in verse 1, and he says, "In the first year of Darius the Mede, I rose to be an encouragement and a protection for him." So here you have God's program of doing away with the Babylonian Empire under Belshazzar, who was the last king of the Babylonians. The handwriting on the wall, remember that? And the Darius came in. So here you have the understanding that the angelic world is helping Darius come into power and establish the kingdom that was going to supplant and take away the Babylonian Empire and replace it with the Medes and the Persian. This is God's program. He had already outlined it. You're going to have the Babylonian Empire that's going to be taken over by the Medes and Persians. It's going to be taken over by the Grecian, which is going to be taken over by the Romans. So you have this progression of powers, and God is involved, and God's angels are involved in making these things happen. And in every case, Satan's angels are trying to thwart what God is doing. So you have this conflict between the angelic world going on with God's program being undertaken. And so here you have insight that Gabriel was helping Darius come into power and be established as the second kingdom that God was going to use as part of the times of the Gentiles. Now, in verses 2 through 20, we're not going to spend a lot of time on verses 2 through 20, but what you have here is a time period of about 371 years. Between verse 2 and verse 20, you have a time period of about 370 years. And so this occurs between 536 BC and about 165 BC. That's the timing of this time frame. So here's what happens. He says in verse 2, "I will tell you the truth. Behold, three more kings are going to rise in Persia." So the Persian Empire is going to have three more kings after Cyrus that are the dominant kings. There's a couple others that were minor kings, but there's mainly three more or four more. It's three more, and then the fourth one is when they're going to, the empire is going to go. So these four kings are mentioned. If you go back and you look in history and you look at different ones, there was, I can't pronounce his name, Cambyses was the next one after Cyrus. And then you had Darius, it's not Darius the Mede, it's another Darius, Hastepes. And then you have Xerxes or Ahasuerus. Now, who was that? Remember Xerxes? Esther's husband. He was the king that Esther married. So he was the third of this lineage of Persian kings. He was the king that Esther married. And so this time frame of Esther is during his reign. And then after him came Artaxerxes, who was the king that gave the proclamation to go back and rebuild the city. And that proclamation is the beginning of the 70 weeks of Daniel. So when that's 445 BC. So you have he just mentioned here there's a progression of four Persian kings. Now during the reign of the Persians kings are in the area, they're centered in the area of Babylon and Iran. That's where their kingdom was. Babylonian Empire was there on the Euphrates River, and then east of that was the Persian Empire, and northeast of that was the Median Empire, and the Medes and the Persians came together in one. And they ousted the Babylonians. And so their empire was there, but their influence spread over the area of the known world, including the area of Israel in the Middle East. But as you progress in time with the Persian Empire, what happens is in the far western regions, the Grecians are beginning to get stronger and stronger and push against the Persians. That's what's happening. In fact, Xerxes went out and fought against the Greeks on the western boundaries of his empire and got defeated. And then you see the Grecians are gaining in strength at the same time that the Persians are in power. But the Persians are in power till about Alexander the Great came into power in 331 BC. I think it was 331 BC, and he reigned for about 9 years or so. So here you have the sequence of Persian kings. Now, one of the reasons people have disputed the book of Daniel's prophecy and the book of Daniel's writings is because it was written before all these things took place, and people said it couldn't have happened because it was so detailed. I mean, the information was so detailed and it was fulfilled so perfectly that it couldn't have been written beforehand, it had to be written after, and they disputed the prophetic nature of God's word in through Daniel. So then in verse 3, it says, "A mighty king will rise, and he will rule with great authority and do as he pleases." This is Alexander the Great, the Grecian king that came in and quickly, swiftly expanded the Grecian Empire and controlled the area of Judea, of the Palestine area, and the Grecian influence became very prominent upon the culture of Israel. So he reigned for about 9 years, and then in 323 BC he died, and then you had his kingdom split up. And it says there in verse 4, "As soon as he has risen, his kingdom will be broken up and parceled out toward the four points of the compass." That means there's east, west, north, and south divisions of the Grecian Empire. So basically what you have is the area of Greece to the west was one of the four areas of the Grecian Empire. The area east, which would be east of Israel, which would have been the remnants of the Persian Empire that was taken over by the Grecians. And then you've got the north, which was Syria and Assyria, or southern Turkey, which was the old Assyrian Empire. And then you've got Egypt to the south. These were the four main regions that were, the Grecian Empire was broken off into four regions. And throughout the chapter 11 here, the predominant ones that are talked about is the north and the south, because that's what's influencing Israel. And that Daniel's focusing on Israel. And so the kings, the Grecian kings of the north, which were called the Seleucids, how you pronounce that? Seleucids. But that was the Grecian, the Syrian aspect of the Grecian kingdom. And you have four leaders or four kings of that Syrian aspect of the Grecians that were called Antiochus. There was Antiochus the first, the second, the third, and the fourth. And the fourth is the one we're going to be dealing with, which was Antiochus Epiphanes. I'm terrible with names. I can't remember people's names, and I can't pronounce people's names. So anyway, just bear with me on that. To the south, you had the Egyptian kings that were called the Ptolemies, basically the Ptolemies, and they were in constant conflict during, from verses 5 through verse 20, you had this ongoing conflict that lasted about 370 years between the kings of the north, Syrian kings that came out of the Grecian Empire, and the kings of the south, the Egyptian kings that also came out of the Greek Empire. So these two parts of the four are in constant conflict during this time period. And Israel's right in the middle. So Israel, every time a king comes through, it affects Israel. I mean, Israel's caught right in the middle of all these different battles between the king of the south and the king of the north, which was a close prophetic rendering of Daniel's understanding of this Grecian empire. Okay? So that's what you have here. You have all of this interaction between the kings of the kings of the north, the kings of the south, the Syrian kings, and the Egyptian kings during this time. So you get down to verse. There's a couple things that I wanted to point out. You get down to verse 21, and then you have the rise of Antiochus Epiphanes. And it says, and in his place, after the other one was destroyed, it says, in his place, a despicable person will arise on whom the honor of kingship has not been conferred, but he will come in a time of tranquility and seize the kingdom by intrigue. So this Antiochus the fourth, Antiochus Epiphanes, is a very deceiving, conniving individual that's a type of the last king that's coming upon the earth, which is the Antichrist. The difference is Antiochus is a Grecian of the third empire. The Antichrist is a Roman of the fourth empire. So they're not the same. He is a type of what's coming down the road. But the reason Daniel is given this information is so that there will not be any misunderstanding about Antiochus being the fulfillment of what Daniel had been talking about in chapter 7 and chapter 9 about the Antichrist. Antiochus Epiphanes is not the fulfillment of the Antichrist prediction in chapter 7 and 9 because he is part of the third kingdom of the Grecian Empire, not part of the fourth empire, which comes later, and the Antichrist. So you got to make sure you understand these things because you can be confused if you just read this and say, well, this sounds like the Antichrist. But it's not the Antichrist. It's talking about this Antiochus Epiphanes. It says here in verse 22, and the overflowing forces will be flooded away before him and shattered also the prince of the covenant. Now, the covenant he's talking about here is not the covenant in Daniel chapter 9. Again, you have to be careful, but it calls in Daniel chapter 9, it talks about the prince to come, and he's going to enter into a covenant with Israel. It's not the same one. There's two different time frames, two different things. What happens here is that there was a king that came before Antiochus that put a tax on the people of Israel and entered into a covenant with them, a covenant of peace. And basically, they paid for peace. And so the Israel prince that was propped up by the Syrian king, Antiochus III, the Israeli prince that was put in control of Palestine or Judea, was propped up, and the Israel agreed to pay a tax in replace for peace. So the Syrian king would not bother Israel, would not bother them as long as they kept paying the tax. And so they paid for peace. And so that's what he's talking about. This covenant was a covenant of peace that was an agreement for the Israelites to pay a tax
as subservient to the Assyrians, they would pay a price or pay a ransom to keep from being destroyed by the Syrian king. And so this king, Antiochus Epiphanes, comes in and he does away with the prince of the covenant. He does away with the person that's in charge of Israel that had entered into the covenant with the prior king of Syria. It says, with overflowing forces, the overflowing forces will be flooded away before him and shattered. He's talking about the king of the south. It says in verse 23, and after an alliance is made with him, he will practice deception. He will go up and gain power with a small force of people. In a time of tranquility, he will enter the richest part of the realm. He will accomplish what his fathers never did, nor his ancestors. He will distribute plunder, booty, and possessions among them, and he will devise his schemes against strongholds, but only for a time. He will stir up his strength and courage against the king of the south with a large army. So the king of the south will mobilize an extremely large and mighty army, but he will not stand, for schemes will be devised against him. So here you have this ongoing battle between the king of the north. This, in this case, is Antiochus Epiphanes. He goes down into Egypt and he ransacks and he plunders the cities of the Nile, the cities of Egypt. And he's very deceiving, very conniving. He'll enter into all kinds of backdoor agreements and then use those against those people. So he is one who is very wicked and very deceitful, and he goes down and he destroys and he conquers parts of Egypt and takes plunder from those places in Egypt. Verse 26, and those who eat his choice food will destroy him, and his army will overflow, but many will fall down slain. As for both kings, their hearts will be intent on evil, and they will speak lies to each other at the same table, but it will not succeed, for the end is still to come at the appointed time. But he will return to his land with much plunder, but his heart will be set against the Holy Covenant, and he will take action and then return to his own land. So as he's going back to Syria from Egypt, his heart is set against the Mosaic Covenant and the covenant with God's people. He hates it, which is a sign that Satan is in control of his mind and his thinking. He hates the covenant that God gave to Moses. He hates the worship of that God. He hates the temple. He hates everything about it. And so he does great damage to the Jews as he's coming back through from Egypt. So he's coming back to Syria and he stops in Jerusalem and he does great damage to the people of Israel and to their worship. But he doesn't stop it at this point. He goes back to Syria. In verse 29, it says, at the appointed time, he will return and come into the south, but this last time, it will not turn out the way it did before. So he's going back to plunder and to go against Egypt one more time. So he goes south, but this time there's something going on. It says here in verse 30, for the ships of Kittim will come against him, and therefore he will be disheartened and will return and become enraged at the Holy Covenant and take action. So who are the ships of Kittim? Cyprus. Kittim and Cyprus is the same place. This is the beginning of the Roman Empire. So the ships are Roman ships, and they're coming to go against this progression of the Syrian king going to the south. They have an alliance with the Egyptians, and so they come down and they interact with Antiochus Epiphanes as he's trying to go down to Egypt, and they come in and help defeat or help keep him from going down to do the same thing, so he's not successful. And so he goes back through the land of Israel enraged because of his lack of success and that he's been thwarted by the beginning of the Romans. And so he stops in Jerusalem. And this is where we get into the situation where it gets confusing if you don't understand the context. It says in verse 30, therefore he will be disheartened and will return and become enraged at the Holy Covenant and take action. So he will come back and show regard for those who forsake the Holy Covenant. So here he is showing regard for the apostates of Israel, the ones who are not following the law, who are not obeying the covenant, who are not sacrificing and worshiping God rightly. So he aligns himself with the apostates of Israel. And then it says, in verse 31, forces from him will arise and desecrate the sanctuary fortress and do away with the regular sacrifice, and they will set up the abomination of desolation.
This is not the abomination of desolation that Jesus spoke of. This is not the abomination of desolation of the Antichrist in chapters 9. And this is an abomination that occurred in history that took place in about 195 or 165 B.C. And Antiochus Epiphanes came into the temple and he supposedly, historically, he sacrificed a pig on the altar and desecrated the temple, and probably placed a statue of a god of Zeus, a Grecian god, in the Holy of Holies, and desecrated the temple, which was an abomination. Okay? So this took place in history as part of the third world empire of the Grecians and the last stages of the Grecian empire. So Antiochus Epiphanes was the last stage of the Grecian empire as far as what impacted Israel. And so he comes into the temple and he desecrates the temple and he creates an abomination of desolation in the temple. This is similar to what's going to happen in the last days with the Antichrist, but it is not the fulfillment of that. So make sure you understand that here we're talking about a Grecian king that does the same thing that's going to happen later in a more violent way. Okay? It says in verse 32, and by smooth words he will turn to godliness those who act wickedly toward the covenant, but the people who know their God will display strength and take action, and those who have insight among the people will give understanding to the many, yet they will fall by sword and by flame and by captivity and by plunder for many days. Now when they fall, they will be granted a little help, and many will join them in hypocrisy, and some of those who have insight will fall in order to refine, purge, and make them pure until the end time, because it is still to come at the appointed time. So here you have what happened in history. They had godly Jews that tried to rise up against them and were slaughtered. And so there was a great tragedy in Israel as far as doing away with the worship and stopping the sacrifice and stopping their time. We talked about this earlier. The Hanukkah that the Jews celebrate is when the temple was cleansed from this event, and they celebrate the Feast of Lights or Hanukkah as a removal of the abomination that occurred in history in 165 BC by the hands of Antiochus Epiphanes. Any questions? This is historical. It's already happened. It's a type of what's going to happen. Now, here we have a turn point here in this passage, and again, Daniel's been given this information so that you'll be clear that when these events happen in history, you won't think that this is the end. You won't think that this is the time of the Messiah, because the time of the Messiah comes after the fourth empire and the last king of the fourth empire, not the third empire. You have to understand that in the context. In chapter 11, verse 36, he changes to the end. In the last part of verse 35, it said, because it is still to come at the appointed time, referring to another time of similar activity that's going to happen at the appointed time before the coming of the Messiah. So we change from this near fulfillment of prophetic truth about the Grecian kings, and this despicable little king that came up at the last of the Grecian Empire, we transfer to the last stage of the Roman Empire and the willful king that comes up as known as the Antichrist. So here in verse 36, you have the angel changing from a near fulfillment of the Grecian Empire to a future fulfillment of the end of the Roman Empire. So verse 36 is talking about the time of the end, which would be the time of the Antichrist, not the time of the Grecian king Antiochus. In verse 36, then the king will do as he pleases, and he will exalt and magnify himself above every god, and will speak monstrous things against the God of gods, and he will prosper until the indignation is finished, for that which is decreed will be done. So in the book of Revelation, chapter 13, you have the same description given of this beast that comes up, which is the Antichrist. In Revelation chapter 13,
Verse 5, it says, "And there was given to him a mouth speaking arrogant words and blasphemies, and authority to act for 42 months was given to him." So here we have this same picture of this Antichrist that is depicted here in Daniel chapter 11, verse 36. Some other insight about this man that's coming, that's going to be a monstrous man. It says in verse 37, "He will show no regard for the gods of his fathers or for the desire of women, nor will he show regard for any other god, for he will magnify himself above them all. But instead he will honor a god of fortresses, a god whom his fathers did not know. He will honor him with gold, silver, and costly stones and treasures. And he will take action against the strongest of fortresses with the help of a foreign god." Okay? It says the foreign god, he will help with a foreign god. Okay, so here you have the understanding in Revelation 13 that this Antichrist is resurrected from the dead by the power of Satan, and then he rules by the power of Satan. And he is given his position as Satan, and he is worshipped because people worship him because of what the dragon has given him, life from the dead. And they worship him and say, "Who is able to wage war against the beast?" Because he is propped up by Satan. It also says that in 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, when it's talking about the coming of this lawless one, the Antichrist. Second Thessalonians chapter 2, it says in verse 8, "Then that lawless one will be revealed, whom the Lord will slay with the breath of his mouth and bring to an end by the appearance of his coming. That is the one whose coming is in accord with the activity of Satan, with all power and signs and false wonders, and with all the deception of wickedness for those who perish." So this Antichrist will be given power from a foreign god, which is Satan. He will worship. He will show no regard for the gods of his fathers. That means he will not be propping up another religious system or worshiping other gods. He's going to elevate himself up to be worshiped himself. So the last 3.5 years of the tribulation, the Antichrist is going to be worshiped as God. That's why he shows no regard for the gods of his fathers, because he has done away with all other gods and says, "I am God." He's talking about pagan gods here. It says he has... It says he has no desire for women, which could mean two things. It could mean that he could be a homosexual, or it could just mean that he is so focused on getting power, he has no time for marriage, no time for normal relationships with a woman. He is focused on becoming the dominant Satan-empowered, Satan-ruled person to rule the world. So he is not going to be a king that has a queen. He's going to be a king that only focuses on himself and his power and gaining that power at that time. Again, he will take his action with the help of a foreign god. He will give honor to those who acknowledge him, and will cause them to rule over the many, and will parcel out land for a price. And at the time of the end, the king of the south will collide with him, and the king of the north will storm against him with chariots, with horsemen, and many ships. And he will enter countries and overthrow them and pass through. Now, you know what happens at the middle of the tribulation. You've got this whole one world government thing in place that's going to be run by 10 kings eventually. At the middle of tribulation, he is going to have a war that tries to overthrow these 10 kings, and he kills three of those, and the other seven give to him. So this is talking about at the time of the middle of the tribulation, when he is establishing his complete, absolute dictatorship of the earth, there's a war, and he overthrows three of those kings, and the others submit to him. So this is talking about that warfare at the end. And says, "Then he will also enter the beautiful land, and many countries will fall, but these will be rescued out of his hand, Edom, Moab, and the foremost, the sons of Ammon." Now that's important, because in the area of these that are kept from his dominion is the city of Petra, which is the place where God has reserved for a place of refuge for the fleeing Israel people that are fleeing out of the land at the midpoint of the tribulation, because Jesus told them, "When you see the abomination of desolation, get out and flee," because his agenda is to destroy all the people of Israel. So these three countries will be kept out of the hand of the of the Antichrist. So there would be a place of refuge for the Israelis. He will stretch out his hand against other countries, and the land of Egypt will not escape, but he will gain control over the hidden treasures of gold and silver, over all the precious things of Egypt, and the Libyans and the Ethiopians will follow at his heel. But rumors from the east and from the north will disturb him. He will go forth with great wrath to destroy and annihilate many, and he will pitch the tents of his royal pavilion between the seas of the and the beautiful holy mountain, yet he will come to his end, and no one will help him. So here is talking about the very end of the time of the tribulation. We're talking about Armageddon, when he pitches his tent in Israel, in northern Israel, and he has all of his armies there that are there to fight against the coming Messiah, the next kingdom that's coming, which is coming from heaven. It's not an earthly kingdom, it's a coming from heaven. And he's got his armies there at Armageddon to fight against the coming Messiah, the King of the Jews, and that's when he's going to meet his end. He's going to be destroyed. So in Daniel chapter 11, Daniel is giving us insight about, first, the progression of the Grecian kings that ends with Antiochus. Now, at the end of the Antiochus reign, you have the Maccabean period, which was what?
They revolted.
They revolted, and they revolted against the Syrian king, probably with the help of some Romans, but they revolted against the Syrian king during the Maccabean stage. So you had a brief period of time where Israel controlled Israel, and it was the Maccabean period, and it lasted until Pompey came in and established the Roman Empire that controlled Israel again. So you had a brief period between the Grecian Empire and the Roman Empire's control over Israel to where the Jews had control under the Maccabean period. So they rose up, and that's when they cleansed the temple and cleaned out that, and they had a brief time where the Jews controlled Jerusalem, but it didn't last for long because then the Romans stepped in and took over control of Israel. Now, next week we will look at chapter 12, which is the last thoughts and the conclusions of Daniel's vision and prophecy, and it all concerns the last 3.5 years of the time before the Messiah comes to set up his kingdom. And so Daniel's given further insight, concluding insights about this time. But again, the whole focus of the book of Daniel is a progression of prophecies that lead to this event of the Messianic kingdom. And so you have to understand and take these things in the context they're given so that you won't get confused when you go back and you read through various parts of the book of Daniel. Okay, we'll stop there and we'll conclude Daniel next week with chapter 12.